Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of today's society, to those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions have become counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. It is sad to me that the events of Ferguson, Missouri, have trickled out over time, allowing people to draw errant conclusions, all because the police force, the judicial system in America, is no longer free and open. It's all into what can we hide, what can we protect. You know, it's the public has no right to know. It's indicative of a failed country. But in the case of Ferguson, the first release was by a free enterprise forensic scientist who provided a drawing of Mike Brown's body that was at the level of a third grader. You know, if I was try to color inside the lines as a third grader, that's might be how I would have drawn an autopsy report. It was pathetic, and based upon what he drew, there were only a small variety of options, all of which made Darren Wilson, the cop, look horrible. But as I continued to study that autopsy drawing that was purchased by the family, it became obvious to me that it was childish. It wasn't remotely reliable. And that to draw any conclusion based upon that picture would be an absolute waste of time. But I bemoan the fact that Darren Wilson, the cop whose salary is being paid by the people, the forensic scientists who work for the city, the county, the state, did not provide information. And I think that is a travesty. You know, I have no issue with the rules regarding the judicial system and what is and is not allowed into the court. But the public has a right to know in a case like this. And when information was available, it should have been published. There were riots. Many people were injured. Some have been subsequently killed. There have been presidential mandates, declarations of all manner and color, as well as a campaign around Michael Brown as the gentle giant with his hands up, don't shoot. Now, that's not what happened. The information that was released this weekend demonstrates conclusively why Darren Wilson has not been arrested, indicted, or arraigned on criminal charges. It is why the federal government under the Obama nation hasn't pressed civil rights litigation against Darren Wilson. You see, Michael Brown's blood is not only on the gun. It's not only on Darren Wilson's uniform. It's also inside the car. There is no set of circumstances that have Michael Brown surrendering, hands up in the air, don't shoot, him being shot down in cold blood by a racist officer, where his blood is on the officer's uniform, on the officer's gun, and splattered throughout his car. Michael Brown was belligerent, high on marijuana, maybe some other drug as well, high from having assaulted and robbed a convenience store, assaulted the owner and robbed the convenience store. He was, in fact, reaching for Darren Wilson's gun. He was threatening the officer. and the officer defended himself against a belligerent and very aggressive man. In the case of extreme understatement, the Washington Post surmised the evidence will make it much harder for the Justice Department to prosecute Wilson on federal charges that he violated Brown's civil rights. Said officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the case. Now, the journalist who wrote this article wasn't capable of coming to that conclusion on his own or her own because he or she had been indoctrinated in educational institutions where the official religion was political correctness and exercising good judgment is no longer within their capability. But the fact is that the forensic evidence demonstrates that Darren Wilson's official report is consistent with the evidence. The 18-year-old who had just assaulted a store owner was smoking marijuana. Tried to take his gun. Now, it doesn't change the fact that I would prefer that police not have guns readily available in the car. This case would not have occurred this way had that been the case. I would much prefer that they carry pepper guns that have, you know, like pistols, they carry a magazine of 6, 10, 12 shots. They fire the pepper cartridges at long range. You know, as long range as a handgun is accurate. You know, handguns are used in fairly close quarters. You ought not be using them in a urban setting. If the person is not charging at you, is not an immediate threat to your life or somebody else's life, and isn't within a matter of 20 or 30 feet, 40 feet, maybe 50 at the max, and these pepper guns will work at that distance. It would have been a vastly better outcome had that been the case. Anyway, they say it will make it almost impossible for a grand jury to indict Wilson on state charges, such as murder or manslaughter. The St. Louis County Police and FBI and a grand jury are investigating the shooting. The Justice Department is investigating the Ferguson and St. Louis County policing practices and whether they violated the rights of the residents, but they aren't going to prevail. Forensic test, this is the second article released in the Ferguson, Missouri. I don't want to give you just one point of view because there have been tens of thousands of people who have protested against what they said was the murder of an unarmed black man and a black boy in their case. And the fact is that once again, they picked the wrong suspect. He wasn't a victim. Michael Brown was a victimizer. He was the perpetrator of this crime, not the victim of this crime. You know, if the African-American community wants to rally beyond a cause, they need to do two things. And I say this with a great deal of compassion and sincerity. First, the African-American community needs to stop being the perpetrator of 80% of interracial crime. When blacks and Caucasians are involved in serious crime, one against the other, 80% of the time, the African-American individual is the perpetrator and the white is the victim. If you're going to charge racism, if you're going to charge racial bias, then you need to stop being the perpetrator 80% of the time. And second, you're going to have to find innocent victims. Michael Brown is not an innocent victim. He was the aggressor. He was the perpetrator of this crime. His own bad judgment is why he is dead. if there is a third lesson to be learned here, it's that we have seriously harmed the collective conscience of many people in America, particularly in the inner cities, particularly in minority communities. Much of that is a direct result of an educational system that indoctrinates versus educates, that does not differentiate between right and wrong, is opposed to exercising good judgment, is designed to be tolerant of all things, even when it's tolerant of those things which are wrong. It is the product of a society that believes in the redistribution of wealth to entitlements, to giving people that which they did not earn. When you give people that which they did not earn, there's a very thin line between that and stealing. What is the difference in being given money on food stamps, giving money on welfare, giving money on housing assistance, giving money on every manner of indulgence, and simply taking the money? It's really a fine line. And we're destroying character in the process. We're eliminating the sense of personal responsibility. The New York Times did the investigation and affirmed that Michael Brown's blood was all over Darren Wilson's gun, police car door, inside of the police car, and his uniform. At the time of the shooting, Wilson told investigators that he was trying to leave his SUV when Brown pushed him back in. He says he was pinned in his vehicle, and for fear of his life, as Brown reached for his gun, he shot him. Brown's family said the teen was killed as he raised his hands to surrender to the officer. There is a 0% chance that the family's rendition of the events is accurate. Wilson told authorities that Brown punched him and scratched him repeatedly, leaving marks and swellings and abrasions on his face and neck. But Sharpton, who is an agitator, who eulogized Brown at his funeral, dismissed Wilson's reasoning. I will read Sharpton's comments, one of the least desirable people in America, when we return to Shattering Myths after the break. Al Sharpton, who is interested in only one thing. It's like a lot of liberals. They pretend to be compassionate. They pretend to be activist. Al Sharpton is an ambulance chaser. And he doesn't care who's in the ambulance. And his reason for chasing the ambulance has nothing to do with the victim in the ambulance, because he'll make up, turn that victim into whoever he serves his interest. He's right. In it for one thing, personal publicity.
He cares, he cares who's in that ambulance. It's got to be a black man. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. But he's a racist in that regard. Because if it was a white man, he wouldn't give a rat's ass. I mean, he really wouldn't care. In this country, when Caucasians are the victims of black violence, the overwhelming preponderance of the time, he's never on the scene. But he's really on the scene, even if the black individual is the agitator. Even if they brought it on themselves, as was also the case with Trayvon Martin. And we've turned into a society where other liberals wring their hands and they go along and say, yeah, we have a real racism. Boy, justice isn't blind in this country. The poor blacks are being oppressed. It's just not true. The facts are 100% inverted of the Al Sharpton myth. He was wrong. And he goes on and says, first of all, if you stopped him, Michael Brown and his friend, walking down the street, what led to the scuffle? Come on, you moron. Michael Brown was high. He had just robbed a convenience store. He had just assaulted the owner. A cop pulls up and tells him to move out of the middle of the street while he's smoking his stogie, his victory cigar. How do you think he reacted? I mean, he's got a juvenile rap sheet as long as your arm. Listen to the lyrics of his song where he wants to go off and kill cops. How do you think he reacted? What do you think led to the scuffle? You watch the videotape of Michael Brown assaulting the convenience store owner? What do you think led to that scuffle? Michael Brown's lack of character, his lack of judgment, his lack of morality. He's dead because of people like you, Al Sharpton, that justify such egregious, immoral, inappropriate behavior and turn thugs into heroes. That's why he's dead. That's what led to the scuffle. It is absolutely revolting. Thousands of protesters nonetheless have called for Wilson's arrest. Why? Because he defended himself? Why? Because a black man assaulted him? Why? Because he was doing his job? Why? Because you don't like the fact that when a black man was robbing a store, he was held accountable? Why? Because you're so racist? You're blind as to reality? No, racism in the African-American community is darn near as powerful as religion. Blinds them to the truth. Wake up, folks. Speaking of waking up, and this was obvious even in the American response to Ebola, where we sent 4,000 American troops. This disease is, in fact, being militarized. In Sierra Leone, the president, Karami, announced over this weekend a major shakeup in fighting Ebola that is devastating his country. He said his defense minister would now head the National Response Center and report directly to him. Previously, the response to Ebola was headed by the health minister. America now has appointed a Ebola czar. We've had exactly zero Americans die of Ebola in having contracted the disease in America. Zero. We have a Ebola czar. Czar is a dictator, folks. Our response to Ebola was to send 4,000 U.S. military. Mr. Karoma said people were dying and quick decisions had to be taken. The military is command and control. There's only one person in the military that gets to decide, and from that point on, it's strictly obeying. It's not deciding. Dictatorial control. Just like any dictatorial regime, that's how the military operates. The person at the top makes the choice, everybody else follows orders, or else. This is what is happening around the world. It's going to be the response to every tragedy. Dictatorship. During the break, Scott asked me, so how many czars do you think America has had in the past? Now that the Abominator appointed a czar for a disease that not a single American has contracted in America and died from. Not a single one. We've got a Liberian that contracted it in Liberia and died from it. We've got a couple of Americans that contracted it in Liberia that were flown back into the United States with the disease and subsequently survived it. And we have a couple of nurses that contracted the disease from the Liberian while they were treating him, who are, I don't know if they're going to die or recover, but you're talking about, in terms of Americans contracting Ebola in America, two individuals. Two. 350 million Americans, and you got two, and the president appoints a czar. I mean, talk about losing our ever-loving mind. Now, since Scott said, so how many czars have America had in the past? I said, oh, gosh, a bunch of them. We've appointed czars for the most ridiculous things. So I just simply Googled czars in U.S. government history. We ought not be surprised that the first to appoint czars, and by the way, this term czar, first most Americans are going to respond the way I did and think of czar, and you're going to think of the dictators prior to World War One, and even between World War One and the lead up to World War Two, that were the leaders of Russia. And you would say, so the dictators of Russia were czars. And so you think of the term as a dictator. I looked up the origins of the term czar, and I shouldn't be surprised. It is a Bulgarian transliteration of the Roman term Caesar. The Balkans were an area that the Romans routinely bludgeoned. And the reason the Balkans got so much Roman attention, vicious Roman attention, many of the Rome's most savage battles, at least the most savage battles outside of the province of Yehuda, Judah, were fought in the Balkans because it became this epicenter and this hug between the Eastern and Western Roman empires. And the peoples in this area, Gauls and Germanic tribes, did not like the Romans lying to them, cheating them, abusing them, enslaving them, cheating them, just treating them like animals. But it's czar is a transliteration of Caesar. And in Rome, the first Caesar was, of course, Julius. There was no J, but Julius, now known as Julius Caesar. Caesar actually meant hairy, and evidently the self-important one, Julius, was hairy, and so Caesar subsequently became the term for supreme dictator. And so in Rome, where at beginning with Julius, Julius, and then Octavian, who became Augustus, the months July and August now on our pagan Roman Catholic calendar, they declared themselves divine. They were not only supreme dictators over the Roman Empire, but gods to be worshipped. Temples erected in their honor. Shrines. That's the origin of this term that America is using. It's of Roman origin. It's not only dictator, but it's man claiming to be God. So we shouldn't be surprised that the first to use the term was America's most aggressive dictator, Franklin Roosevelt. He came up with 11 different czars, 11 different positions for czars. Czar of this, czar of that. 11 different czars. 19 total appointees, 17 of which were godmen, dictators, which were appointees confirmed by the U.S. Senate. 11 positions, 19 czars. Harry Truman, following in suit, had 6 czars. Dwight Eisenhower, the ignoramus that decided that we should invade Europe by rowing into the teeth of the German defenses, had 1 czar. Lyndon Johnson, 3. The great new society, it needed czars. Richard Nixon, 3 czars. Gerald, I can't chew gum and walk at the same time, Ford, 2 czars. Jimmy Carter, the grotesque anti-Semite, the man who refused to allow American athletes to go to the Moscow Olympics because he started the war in Afghanistan, not Russia, but Jimmy himself, he had 2 czars. Ronald Mr. Freedom himself, America, 1 czar. Ronald Reagan. George H.W. Bush, 2 czars. Bill Clinton, he upped his game, man. He had the most czars since Franklin, Delano Roosevelt. 8 czar positions with 11 appointees, 7 of which were confirmed by the Senate. George W. Bush. Don't accuse me of being stupid. 33 czars. Positions, 49 individuals. 28 approved by Senate. 49 individuals called a czar by his administration over 33 different positions. Barack Hussein Obama, the great Obaminator, has topped them all. The greatest czarist of them all. 38 positions for czars with 44 appointees, 35 approved by the Senate. Now, you might say, so what are these czars all doing? Well, let me just give you a rundown of the various things that we've had czars for. We've had a foreign aid czar. Yeah, it was in 2006, appointed by George W. Bush. A czar to decide how we would allocate foreign aid. Now, you'd think that that would be the responsibility of the State Department. But no, we have a foreign aid czar. We've had an AFPAC czar. And you say, AFPAC? What's an AFPAC czar? Oh, that was a special representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan. Now, that made a lot of sense because we were leaguing with Pakistan to fight the Taliban in Afghanistan, even though we knew that the Taliban was part of the Pakistani armed forces. Oh, we didn't just have one aid czar. We had an aid czar in 93 and 94 and 97 and 2001 and 2002, 2004, 2009, 2012. We still have an aid czar appointed by Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. Yeah, boy, we've had a bunch of AIDS czars. We've had an anti-poverty czar. Yeah, a czar of giving stuff away. You know, the first anti-poverty czar was appointed by Lyndon Johnson. And, of course, his war on poverty has created more poverty than we had when he started his war. It's like almost all American wars. They're counterproductive. Then we had an Asian carp czar. Yeah, an Asian carp czar. Council on Environmental Quality. I don't know if it was because we had an epidemic affecting Asian carp. You know, those are the big goldfish that I don't know. But yes, indeed. Barack Obama, he appointed an Asian carp czar. John Gross is the John Goss, I should say. He's still serving in that position. 2010, he was appointed. Council on Environmental Quality is where he is operating. We've had two auto czars. Yeah, auto czar. I always thought that, you know, automobile companies were private enterprise, but no, yeah, Barack Obama appointed two auto czars. Then we had the auto recovery czar, not to be confused with the auto czar. That was also appointed by Barack Obama. As a matter of fact, the auto czar and the auto recovery auto worker czar are serving coterminously. We have a bank bailout czar. Yep, George W. Bush. He was the TARP czar. Then we had another bank bailout czar appointed by Barack Hussein Obama. Would you believe that we had a bioethics czar? Mm-hmm. Yep. 2001 to 2005, Leon Kass served as the bioethics czar. We had a bird flu czar. Yep, for 3 years, 2004, 5, and 6. We had a birth control czar. I wonder if they had one of those in the Clinton White House. No, that was George W. Bush that appointed a birth control czar. Then Bill Clinton appointed a border czar. Barack Obama re-upped him, about 11 years after the first border czar's office was shut down, reopened the office and reestablished a border czar. The Congress is not responsible, I guess, for the budget. Nope. George W. Bush appointed not one, but three different budget czars. We have a cleanup czar. I guess we're a messy country now, so we have a cleanup czar. The cleanup czar was the Special Assistant Attorney General to investigate corruption. Oh, it was appointed by Harry Truman. George W. Bush loved the cleanup czar concept so much, he appointed not one, but two cleanup czars. And then we have a climate czar. Yep, I can imagine you, czar of the climate. I'm the grand poobah of the climate. You shall cool down today. Over there, I want it to rain, and over here, a little snow, please. Could you turn down the thermostat a few degrees on Texas? I want to turn it up a couple of degrees on Minnesota. Yep, we had a climate czar. He was also called the global warming czar by Barack Obama before we realized we couldn't use the term global warming because the planet's not warming. It's actually having a cooling period in the middle of what is a sixth-century warming period. Carol Browner in 2009 was the global warming czar. She served for 3 years. It's hard to imagine, but we have a copyright intellectual property czar. That was George W. Bush. Barack Obama must have loved the concept because he has an enforcement coordinator for intellectual property as the copyright czar. And it goes on. Yes, we're going down the list of czars appointed by the United States, remembering that czar is from the Roman. They were dictators who took the Roman Republic to an empire, who were worshipped as gods. I mean, if you're going to pick a term, and, you know, if you're pretending that you're a democracy, America's not. It used to be a republic. It's not really a republic anymore because of we're ignoring the Constitution, and republic is the rule of law, and we're ignoring the Constitution. So I don't even know what we are. But if you're pretending you're a democracy, you can't use the title czar. You just can't. I mean, there's no worse title in the world than czar. I mean, Rome was by far, the Roman Empire was by far the most corrupt, merciless, immoral, degrading country in human history. That's not my opinion, that's Giannis's opinion, but you can read their history if you want. I've written a nice recap of it. If you go to Yada Yada and you go to the seventh volume of Yada Yada, you'll find a comprehensive history of Rome's battles and their particularly their leaders from Julius Caesar through about the demise of really the Eastern Western Roman Empire. A pretty good review of all of the leadership of that period of time. They were revolting. The time of the Caesars in Rome, which is when that chapter really focuses on their morality or lack thereof. I don't think there's anybody in human history as collectively as perverse as the Caesars of Rome, and that's the basis of the term. Anyway, we had a communications czar by George W. Bush. We had a compensation czar by Barack Obama. We had a consumer czar by Barack Obama. We had a car czar as opposed to an auto czar by William Clinton. We had a cybersecurity czar by George W. Bush as the United States is ramping up the NSA to spy on everyone in every country around the world. We had a cybersecurity czar reappointed by George W. Bush, renaming the title ever so well, actually repositioning it. It was a special advisor to the president on cybersecurity in the Office of Management and Budget, and then the cyber czar became a director, National Cybersecurity Center. Then Barack Obama, he had his cybersecurity czar, who was a director of White House Office of Cybersecurity, because, of course, the Barack Obama Meister wants to be a czar himself. Then we have, reappointed a cybersecurity czar, reestablishing the position, Barack Obama did. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had a czar of censorship. Yes, nothing says free press like a czar of censorship. He also appointed a czar of information. and we accuse the Russians and the Nazis of propaganda. Lyndon Johnson had a czar of Latin American affairs. Yeah, the war on drugs certainly required that. George W. Bush had a democracy czar, even though there are no democracies in the world today. There hasn't been a democracy since the oligarchy in Sparta and the oligarchy of the Delian League. Those were the world's last two democracies. Both failed. But yet, George W. Bush had a democracy czar. There was a domestic czar by Lyndon Johnson. I don't know, for housekeepers, maybe? We had a domestic policy czar by George W. Bush. We had a domestic violence czar by Barack Obama, a drug czar by Richard Nixon, a different form of drug czar with a different responsibility for Mr. Bubblegum and Stutter, George or Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford is the guy that came up with the great idea of atoms for peace and provided Iran with their first nuclear power plant and actually gave them the uranium to make it work, which is the basis of their nuclear bomb program. We have a drug czar with Ronald Reagan. You know, this war on drugs, what an absolute disgrace. Drugs, after decades of having this war on drugs, drugs are pure, more prevalent, less expensive, and used by more people. And we have more illegal immigration into America as a result of our war on drugs. Our prisons are overfilled. We imprison a higher percentage of our population than any nation on earth. All because of this war on drugs. It is an absolute, total, and complete failure. More of it isn't the answer. Stopping the war on drugs is the only sane response. Anyway, that was Ronald Reagan. We had a drug czar under George W. Bush. Another one by George Bush, one by Bill Clinton.